I remember buying this album almost 2 years ago, without ever hearing any of the songs and beforehand, and just being blown away by it, how good it was. Kacey Musgraves is the artist. Silver Lining is the song. She's an immensely talented singer-songwriter from Texas, and if she doesn't listen to Coast to Coast, she should, because according to published reports, she has an ongoing intense interest in aliens and UFOs and topics that we like to cover. In fact, that's what the topic is on the menu tonight. We're talking with Robert Davis, PhD, about his book, The UFO Phenomenon, Should I Believe? And the book is sort of a blueprint for how science should tackle this topic. Whether it will or not, well, we're going to find out. We're going to get Robert to give us his opinion, then we'll open up the phone line. So much more to come here in our final hour of Coast to Coast tonight. Okay, before we open up the phone lines, Robert Davis, your book sort of leads to the point where you have some suggestions on what should happen. So tell me what should happen, how it should proceed, and then tell me what you think will happen.
Good question. Difficult to answer with absolute certainty, but the issue of the validity of UFO evidence remains, I would say, at the heart of the phenomenon. But the scientific community would generally not agree with theories that are not consistent with accepted scientific principles, dispute evidence which supports the phenomenon. So evidence, in other words, must be subjected to scientific study that's capable of reproduction and authentication before concluding that an alien intelligence is operating UFOs. And the authenticity of such evidence, yet to be determined, if ever, relates to the question of how conventional research or future research can essentially determine the nature behind these people's experiences with UFOs. So approaching this phenomenon from a scientific perspective is very difficult because of the lack of physical evidence to analyze. And what compounds this issue is the problem associated with UFO behaviors, which seem to defy inertia and gravity. So we must await newly developed scientific approaches, which may or may not improve our ability to effectively analyze the evidence, again, which is considerably lacking. Although I do believe that the alien abduction phenomenon, the aspects of psychic experiences, may provide some interesting scientific data, which should be expanded upon by a multidisciplinary team of scientists, as I mentioned previously, to investigate this related phenomenon. The question by scientists is, how to determine if such evidence proves that they are intelligently controlled, and also what criteria should be adopted to verify whether or not non-human intelligence is visiting our planet. And, not everyone maintains the same definition and standards of this criteria. So there's going to be major differences of opinions as to what type of evidence, provides this irrefutable proof. And the focus over many decades has largely been, at least in my mind, unscientific, since most research has focused on the conspiracy theories, Roswell, as you mentioned, the Phoenix Lights, Mendelssohn Disclosure Project, these government documents, etc. And that's a wide range of pseudoscience in terms of better understanding the who, what, and why associated with the phenomenon, although it recognizes the existence of the phenomenon. But it decreases, shall we say, the credibility of the phenomenon, and it misses the point of improving further UFO investigations by the scientific community.
So it seems like Robert, there's a vicious cycle there, because scientists will say, okay, I'm not going to study this. There's no credible evidence, and there's no credible evidence because scientists don't study it. I mean, it takes guts to go ahead and jump into this. Seems to me that the kind of process that you're describing, where scientists have to bang heads and decide what the criteria is for how to proceed, That would be great fun. And you look at like the, you know, the thousands of landing site trace cases. It seems to me that it would be fun to go after this stuff, to dig into topics that are, you know, largely unexplored, where you could be a trailblazer. I don't get the lack of interest in it. I really don't.
No, I agree, and it's unfortunate because, if anything, the scientific community should be much more engaged in this phenomenon. And unfortunately, for a variety of reasons, they're not. But a major goal of scientific researchers should be to try to establish agreed-upon theories and methodological protocols that are tested by recognized scholars from many different scientific disciplines, again, well, supported by independent studies to verify research outcomes.
Well, here's the question. How do you make it respectable? How do you make it respectable enough for people like you and your colleagues to jump in and take a look at it?
I don't think you can make it respectable at this point because we don't have the scientific principles, as far as I'm concerned, that firmly exist. To pursue a course of action to help explain the nature of the phenomenon. You know, at best, I would say that, yes, the tangible evidence from landing sites, and we can go into detail about that. I don't think it's necessary, but there are many effects on plants, on soils, on trees, etc. Some believe it's due by radiation or some type of electromagnetic effect. But I think the alien abduction phenomenon should be more extensively studied, especially by psychologists, in order to better obtain phenomenological detailed accounts of their experiences as well as they possibly can. And I think that type of intense analysis with these so-called experiences should be conducted, and it might provide, again, additional basis of evidence to help support the consistencies of their experiences and the validity, to some extent, as to why they share these common experiences along with the psychic consciousness component of it.
Okay, let's take a couple of calls. Mark in Baltimore on the wild card line. Hi, Mark. You're on with Robert Davis.
Hi, how you doing? Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Yes, I can.
Oh, okay. I realize that many people may think that my account is nothing but anecdotal, but I can tell you what I saw. I am 100% certain of what I saw in Pine Bush, New York, after I read Ellen Crystal's book, which I have right in front of me, and it's called Silent Invasion. And I went up there, and I saw above the trees, I saw an orange orb, dimly lit, and it was just above the tree line, and it moved from my right very slowly to my left, and me and my girlfriend, we had cameras, and we took pictures, and it moved from my right to the left very, 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 very slowly, and we started snapping pictures, and then it just disappeared behind the rest of the trees. And, you know, we went back home and we developed the pictures, and they really didn't come out that well because I guess it was at night. And I wrote to Ellen Crystal about that, and I have a letter that she wrote back to me right in front of me now on my desk, dated August 14th, 1992.
How long did it last, Mark? How long? What was the duration of this thing?
About a minute and a half.
And So, Robert, let's ask this question. Robert, is that a plasma if it lasts a minute and a half?
Possibly, although many ufologists contend that it is a form of non-human intelligence. But yes, it can be plasma, and I appreciate your caller's sharing of information. And again, at the top of the hour, I also had a very similar experience in observing an orange orb. Many thousands of individuals have. Is it non-human intelligence or some type of atmospheric event, such as plasma, which may manifest as that? And again, plasma, which comprises 99% of the universe, behaves in a very similar manner to characteristics of UFO behaviors. But what that is, who knows? It's impossible to adequately explain that event, although it is common in nature.
Mark, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
So did this thing behave like a, like a craft, or how was it behaving?
Yeah, it looked like it moved, like it had literal movement. I mean, it didn't look like, it wasn't moving in a non-ballistic manner whatsoever. It was moving in a straight line from my right to my left. And I was watching it. I stared at it while my girlfriend was snapping away photos. And I sent the photos, and I wrote my account to Ellen Crystal, and she wrote me back, and she said the same thing that he just said, that it was too vague for her to comment on. But she told me, you know, at the time, she said, if I ever go again, that I should call her, and maybe that we could coordinate. And I really never got back to her, which I should have. But, I know what I saw, and a lot of people might think that it's anecdotal, but I swear to God, as God is my witness, I saw an orange orb. It was about the size of, I would say, if you put your thumb up next to it, it was about the size of like a little dot, maybe like the planet Jupiter.
Okay.
The sky, about
all right.
That size. And it was definitely orange. It didn't have movement to it. It moved.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing. Appreciate it. Robert, I guess, Mark mentioned that his girlfriend was taking photos, and I've seen those kind of photos where you got an orb and you see it in person, and boy, it looks really dramatic, but it's in a sea of inky darkness, and it just looks like a little dot by the time the photo gets back. The idea of photographic evidence, scientists would ask for it, and yet they're not very impressed by it when the photos do show up. And now that we have CGI technology, photographic evidence is called into question under the best of circumstances.
I agree completely. Many scientists consider these pictures as hoaxes, which is easy to produce on computers, it's anecdotal in nature. And how do you study it? They recognize that it probably exists, but many scientists would contend that it is an atmospheric event, like plasma again, or ball lightning, which can, believe it or not, go down chimneys and enter people's homes. This exists, and here again, plasma can move in nonlinear fashions, and again split into different parts. So, what the caller and I, among many others, have been experiencing with these orbs, it may be plasma, or it may be non-human intelligence. How do you study it? Can you put it in a lab and do some kind of analysis?
Well, of course not. But I mean, if it's an intelligence and you don't mind being seen, but you don't really want to be studied, you can appear in that way. I mean, you can. There's very little risk that anybody will eventually figure out what it is if you appear in this manner, in an unpredictable way, in which witness testimony doesn't count, in which photographic evidence doesn't count. You don't appear in the same place another time. Pretty tough to study.
Yes, and some people will contend that within the field of quantum physics, it might explain these orbs as well as other aspects of these phenomenon. And although it's theoretical, of course, in nature, these orbs, among other UFO phenomena, may be extra-dimensional, which might help to explain accounts of missing time and time distortion, high strangeness that is often experienced in a close UFO encounter. And in fact, there are many people who have come in contact with orbs, and besides instilling a considerable amount of understandable fear during that encounter, they have claimed to have received telepathic communication from them, and thus they believe it to be governed by non-human intelligence.
Let's try to get another call in before the break. Sure. Jeff in Culver City. Jeff, we got about 3 minutes before we go to a break. What's on your mind?
Oh, yeah, how you doing, George? And
Howdy.
Davis. Yeah, it's one of two things. Either, the government knows about these crafts and they're lying about them, or they really don't know but want to know about the contacts. But what I've been primarily interested in is the size of these UFOs. They all seem to be enormously huge, and I've always suspected that the size of these crafts has something to do with transport functions, like giant cargo ships. You know, whether or not these crafts were built either to bring alien life forms here or to transport us off the planet, they have to be parked somewhere where no one can visually see them except perhaps certain individuals. So my question is this, Mr. Davis, if these gigantic crafts are not in some desolate aircraft hangar in the desert or situated in humongous mountain caverns, do you think that they're parked either on the moon or just hovering around in deep space far from spy satellites? And I'll take the answer off the air.
Well, thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, that's a good amount of several questions, but certainly UFOs have been described in various ways. They come in numerous sizes and shapes. Some describe it as, you know, a mile long, as some people did during the Phoenix Light incident. There's no question that there's an enormous variety of types of aerial events associated with UFOs in terms of their physical and kinematic behavior. Whether or not the government knows conclusively what they are and what their mission is, yeah, I don't think so. Although many contend, again, that they do. But even if the government or military does know, which I dispute, they're not going to disclose that to the public. Simply because they don't want to instill, for obvious reasons, a potential panic on the part of society, who will obviously ask the government quite significantly why they held this information, you know, secret for so long, and associated questions as to what is their mission, which they probably do not know. And the government, official government reports recently disclosed by the White House, not surprisingly, dispute these events as ET in origin. So it's hard to really make sense of these documents. They're all essentially the same. Some are somewhat interesting, like the Smith memo, written a long time ago, who contends that he's had personal conversations with high-level officials who believe, who told him that, indeed, we do have a spacecraft and we are studying it. Nick Pope, who was on the UFO desk in England for several years, also came to the conclusion that we have ongoing research with the phenomenon, as well as Russia and certainly many other countries. And what the conclusions are remains to be seen. It certainly hasn't been made public at all. But there are more significant incidents that are extraordinarily inexplicable. And again, I don't know if we have sufficient time to do that, but let me just briefly say that through the Freedom of Information Act, cosmonauts in a Soyuz space mission looked out their window and saw angels, human-looking, with halos about their heads and wings. Obviously, it was written off to space sickness, anoxia, etc. However, when another Soyuz spacecraft docked with it, not surprisingly, guess what? They also saw the same thing. You know, what does that mean?
I'll tell you what, I'll tell you some stories from Russia after we go to the break. I made a couple of trips there and came back with hundreds of pages of formerly classified, some still classified information, what the Russian government and military thinks about UFOs. And then we'll go back to the phone lines. Got a whole bunch of people with comments and questions for my guest, Dr. Robert Davis, author of The UFO Phenomenon. We'll be right back. That's Roger Daltrey singing Helter Skelter, and whoever produced this album has a bit of a sense of humor. If you know about this song, it sort of grew out of some remarks made by Pete Townsend on the radio. I think he made disparaging remarks about the Beatles being a pop group, not a rock group, something to that effect. And so Paul McCartney and John Lennon cranked this out, a raucous, hard rock song, kind of in response to those remarks. And here we are decades later, and Roger Daltrey is recording them, kind of a unique circle of events there. We're talking with Robert Davis about his new book, The UFO Phenomenon, Should I Believe? A lot of folks on the phones. We'll get to as many of your calls as we can right after this on Coast to Coast. Robert Davis, before the break, I mentioned that I'd tell you a little bit about the Russian government and their interest in the UFO topic. I don't want to dominate the time we have remaining because there's a lot of folks on the line. I'll just tell you that the Russian military conducted what was probably the largest study in the history of the world for a 10-year period. They had every unit in the vast Soviet military empire had to report all UFO sightings and incidents to a central location. Thousands of reports came in. They analyzed them all, not because they're interested in UFOs or alien beings or where they came from, but because they thought by studying UFOs, they could dominate the U.S. in terms of stealth technology, that they could somehow duplicate the stealth capabilities that UFOs had displayed. And I'll leave it at that. At some point, maybe I'll share with you some of the files that we brought back. I want to go to the phone lines, though. On the Skype line, Michelle calling in from Mount Fuji, Japan. That's a first for us. Welcome to the program, Michelle. You're on with Robert Davis.
Hi, thank you, George. I just wanted to take a moment to say that I really love when you're on. You have a great journalistic style, and I really love it.
Thank you.
No problem. So about 2 weeks ago, I'm about 15 miles or so from Mount Fuji, and I live on the third floor, so I can see Mount Fuji really well from my apartment. And about 2 weeks ago, I looked out, and there were these lights that were in the sky, kind of over the base line of the mountain as it comes down. And they were very, very odd. They were very glowing. They looked almost like flares or fireworks or something, but they were in a pattern of, say, three, and they came up, and I saw them for a good 2 or 3 minutes, and then I went inside, and I looked again, and they were a different pattern, and I kept watching them, and every now and then they would fade out, and then a new pattern would come up, just kind of come up, almost like a flare, but they lasted for, I mean, a good 2 or 3 minutes, and it just seemed very odd to me. I could not figure out what they were. They were big enough that I could see them from this far away. And I don't think that they were UFOs, but I guess from the scientific perspective, what possibly could that be? I mean, what could create something like that if it wasn't UFOs?
Robert, any thoughts?
Well, you could discuss the various theories associated with your experience. And again, thank you for sharing that. You're certainly not alone. Many UFOs have been reported over volcanoes that are active. And scientists like Persinger, I forget the names of others, who have studied UFOs contend that it is a geological phenomenon associated with some form of tectonic strain that emits these electromagnetic charges, which might explain why many UFOs are often seen, again, during active volcanic activity. But that did not happen when you were observing Mount Fuji. Here again, I hate to be overly redundant. Could it be non-human intelligence? Can it be plasma? Can it be craft from some other stellar star system, extra-dimensional, who knows? Who knows? But many people are, like you, especially those who have direct contact with ETs, are very reluctant to share their experience, not surprisingly, for fear of ridicule. And if they go to a psychiatrist, they're more likely are going to be put on medication for what the medical community may regard as delusion, or some type of other psychological anomaly, which is generally not the case, although certainly we can't dispute that some people are not balanced enough and report these kinds of incidents. But I don't dismiss that.
I would just say, Michelle, thanks for calling in. Michelle, thanks for calling in and sharing this. We all know what Mount Fuji looks like. I mean, we've all seen pictures. And as you were describing what you had seen, I had Mount Fuji in the background of my mental picture. And thank you for calling in. Appreciate it. First-time caller, Karen in Texarkana, Texas. Hi, Karen. Welcome to the program. You're on with Robert Davis.
Well, thank you, George Knapp and Dr. Robert Davis, for a wonderful program. I'm a consultant for the organization you've been talking about, FREE, and also an experiencer. And I do the Facebook group, and I want to have a comment and then a question I can take off the air.
Okay.
Okay, my comment is I want to tell you the most amazing thing that has happened to our organization. It happened last week, and that was Dr. Edgar Mitchell put his name to the organization. So we're now the very long name of the Dr. Edgar Mitchell Foundation for Research into Extraterrestrial Encounters.
There's a mouthful.
Yeah, but it's a wonderful acknowledgement. He is a founding, Ray Hernandez is a firecracker person who got this started, and he got Dr. Mitchell to agree to put his name on it as a founding board member also. Dr. Mitchell's been with us since the start. And what a wonderful person to have as our forefather, in a sense, here coming Father's Day, because he's been so open about everything he's experienced in terms of his being an astronaut, but also, you know, his consciousness, you know, expanding experiences being on the moon and being very willing to talk about extraterrestrials in the mix of his moon experiences. So thank you so much to Dr. Mitchell for, you know, giving us that encouragement for our group. And I just want to tell people that website, we have a new website, experiencer.org, so people can come and get you know, connected to the organization. So thank you for having the show. And then my question is for Dr. Robert Davis. Thank you so much for bringing our organization up and talking so well about the scientific aspect being studied. What is the number one thing you are really curious about coming out of our magnificent survey, our historical survey of experiencers? I'm just curious what you are really looking forward to. And thank you again for letting me come and chat with you guys.
Thanks, Karen. Maybe we'll have your organization or somebody from it on the show sometime. But thanks for the question. We'll hear what Dr. Davis has to say.
Yes. Thank you for mentioning Free again and for your question. In fact, I had a long conversation with Ray Hernandez just yesterday, who is an experiencer and has remarkable experiences. You know, I would recommend people who have had supposedly easy contact to look at the website ASTERN, A-C-T-E-R-N, by Mary Rodwell, who has conducted many interviews on literally thousands of individuals who have reported ET experiences. And she is also a founder of Free. And the results that she's obtained are remarkably similar. And these people, for the most part, are highly distressed because of their reluctance to share their unique experiences with people who may interpret it as a form of psychosis or schizophrenia or something else. So they hold it inside until they see Mary Rodwell, who helps solve their problems and reduces considerably their fear and concerns. But what I regard as where we should go is just that. More qualitative information by those who report ET contact. And although we have some very interesting quantitative data obtained through our survey, we do need the qualitative, descriptive reports by these individuals, interpreted by not only quantum physicists, but sociologists, psychologists, among others, to better understand the nature of the experience, consciousness, and our reality, and quantum physics associated with this phenomenon. But you know, do we look at the Einstein theory of general relativity, which talks about interstellar travel and wormholes, which may account for their ability to get here from there? Carl Sagan is also a supporter of this. Or can quantum physics explain it as extra-dimensional hypothesis? But again, these theories exist as theories yet to be proven. And Free, which should be highly commended for its needed research, which I advocated for in my book, not surprisingly, and it has been advocated by others in the past, which has not been done until now, which Free is doing in an extensive and appropriate manner. Nevertheless, we're not going to determine irrefutably through these surveys the essence of the who, what, and why associated with the phenomenon. But it's an important start. It's where we should go. And based on these findings, we plan to write a publication and try to submit it for acceptance in a peer-reviewed scientific journal in order to wake up some of those in the scientific community to become more engaged.
Well, that'd be awesome. I mean, I wish you good luck. And maybe we'll have to have Karen or somebody from her organization on the program at some point. But thanks for that call. West of the Rockies, Vera in Anchorage, Alaska. Hi, Vera. You're on with Robert Davis.
Hello, George and Robert. First of all, would like to apologize to all the people that I laughed at when they spoke about UFOs.
Oh?
Yes. I had an experience August 25, 2013, I was awakened by a large bright light shining into my bedroom window. I couldn't figure out what was making this large amount of bright light that came through the window. So I looked out, and there was a huge circular light over the building that's behind my building. This lasted for about 20 minutes. I went to the restroom and I looked out again. It was still there. I tried to convince myself that it was the moon, and apparently the forces inside the light knew that I was trying to convince myself that it was the moon, although I really wasn't believing.
How do you know that?
Because, well, it moved away, first of all. And then a month later, I was in Atlanta, Georgia, for my grandson's graduation from the police academy and from his college, a bachelor's degree. And I looked out the window, and this bright light was right next to the moon. And that's when I realized that the intelligence of whatever it is knew what I was trying to convince myself of. Now, I took a picture here in Anchorage of what I saw. Then in Atlanta, I took more pictures, and my grandson came home, and I called him. I said, look out the window here. And he looks out the window, and his immediate response was, why do we have two moons?
Oh.
So it wasn't just my eyes that saw it.
Vera, what do your photos show?
I apologize to all the people that I laughed at over the years.
And did you? You laughed at people who had told you the same kind of thing?
Well, when I heard, I had never experienced this before. So when I would hear, I would just, you know, give a chuckle, you know, because you really didn't know how much of that or what I was hearing that I believed. And like I said, one of my first instinct was to try to rationalize what I saw.
Well, very quickly,
although
what do your photos show?
The moon was not that large.
Hey, Vera, what did the photos show? What did the photos show?
When I went back and pulled the photographs up, it wasn't a circular. It was more defined with smaller type lightings. It had a rectangular silhouette around the balls, the round ball lighting that I thought I saw there. So it was more definition to the picture.
Okay. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. Let's get Robert's reaction to it. Thanks for calling.
It's not unusual that there are discrepancies between personal observations of such events and what associated photographic information provides. Just like some people see a UFO, and while others looking at the same thing don't. So, again, what is it in terms of our perception of reality that may be altered, but nevertheless, many other people report not only what you just shared, but also alien beings in their bedroom, among other associated unusual ET contact, which again defies logical explanation. And I'm sure most of your listeners are aware of the alien abduction phenomenon. Where science much does study more extensively in terms of people reporting being abducted and subjected to biologic experiments, ET hybrid babies, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe for DNA retrieval for some reason, who knows?
You know, Robert, maybe Vera needs to get a hold of Karen there in Texarkana and the Free People and explore this further. If she had the same thing that followed her to two different cities far apart, maybe there's other things that she needs to explore. We need to try to get one more quick call in. Gary on the wildcard line in Ontario, Canada, has been holding on for a long time. Gary, you still there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, you better make it a quick one. We got about a minute.
Thanks, George. Right. Okay, I just want to mention two books. These books came into my attention after I'd had them for 10 years, and they practically dropped out of my bookcase into my hands. They didn't really, but I found them so simply. One's called Bringers of the Dawn by Barbara Marciniak. She lives in North Carolina, just above where the tragedy occurred,
yes.
That happened in South Carolina, but she lives in North Carolina. Anyway, she's in touch with the Pleiadians. The subtitle of the book is Teachings from the Pleiadians, and they say that they're shooting cosmic rays at us to change our DNA. They want us change us from 2 strands to 12 strands. And this is going to change our chakras. We only have 10 and 7 in our bodies and 2 outside of our bodies, apparently.
All right, you better go quickly to the second book because we're going to run out of time here.
Okay, it's called We the Arcturians. And it's by 3 women down in New Mexico. One is named Norma Milanovich. There's Betty Rice and Cynthia Plosky that combined to write the book. And Norma's a channeler, and so is Barbara Marciniak a channeler. And that's how they contacted these ETs.
All right. Gary, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Robert Davis, PhD, author.
All I can say is when you review all the UFO books that have ever been written, there's a heck of a lot of sense and nonsense, a lot of fact and fiction, and it's hard to know what to believe. But, again, getting back to confirmation bias, many of us make errors in inductive reasoning. If you believe...
Well, it's good to take it all with a grain of salt. I mean, there's a lot of evidence, but it's good to take it with a grain of salt. Thanks, Robert Davis. Appreciate it. Thanks to my colleagues there at Coast for helping with tonight's program, Gina Salvati, Nathan Staton, our webmaster, Sean, Dan Galani, Chris Boros, and to my earlier guest, Jamie Bartlett, and to, of course, Dr. Robert Davis. Tomorrow night, Dr. Ruth Kastner to talk about quantum physics, understanding our unseen reality. Good night, everyone.